to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Jennifer Curtin. Hi, Jennifer Curtin. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Interesting tales and interesting travels and interesting opinions been going on around politics this week.
I know. It's like second week in a row where everything's just really crazy.
Let's start with everybody's favourite Pacifican country, Nauru.
Well, there's been a couple of things that have happened really on Nauru, apart from, you know, the squalid conditions for refugees around, you know, Barry Soper's claim that's gotten lots of attention about this is just a waste of money to let our Prime Minister go. But also now Winston Peters coming out and saying that the number of refugees that New Zealand should take shouldn't be increased by any significant number.
I think that caught the Prime Minister by surprise?
You know, I'm not sure. I just think my take on this is that he's in this international forum. It's his job as, you know, Foreign Affairs Minister to grandstand a little bit for his people back home and just to remind everybody in this noise around Clare Curran and the Prime Minister that he's also a player. So before the election, New Zealand First did maintain that they would increase the number of refugees that New Zealand would take. And, you know, he was very clear to separate the issue of refugees and asylum seekers out from immigration cuts. So before the election. So his party's position was that they would increase it. Some analysts are saying he actually did say that he would lift it to 1,500, and if that's the case, then he's backtracked. But I think there's an element of posturing to this. And so I don't think, I'm not sure how much Winston Peters does anymore would surprise the government, because this is kind of his modus operandi. He just brings things out and throws them out into the air, and, you know, you've just got to have a thick skin and roll with it and know that when you get back into cabinet when you're home, you'll sort it out.
So what was the point of anyone going over to Nauru? Just to sort of go, hi, hello, hi, good, let's get out of here. There's nothing here anyway. Can't do a good junket.
No, they talk about really important issues for the Pacific Islands, and
right,
this is considered the forum where, this is the only kind of forum where the focus is on the really small states that make up the Pacific, to have conversations around critical issues for them. So it's about oceans, it's about fisheries, it's about climate change. This year they talked about drug smuggling. So they don't get an opportunity on the bigger platforms to have these kinds of conversations. Obviously, the refugee issue was off the table, but no doubt there was probably some discussions going on behind the scenes around it as well between officials.
Do you think all the hullabaloo about Jacinda Ardern flying up there and flying back was warranted?
Look, I mean, my position on this as a feminist political scientist is that, you know, we haven't had this situation before where we've had a prime minister who's a new mum, who has a bub that hasn't had the inoculations required to fly with her to Nauru, and she's still feeding. So we don't know if this, you know, this isn't the norm. But
I suspect that we've had some frivolous flights before, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm waiting for people to document this, and I'm really surprised the Taxpayers Union hasn't really jumped on this and done some, you know, revealing of extravagant trips in the past. I wouldn't label this, though, an extravagant trip. This is something that she needed to do. And there was a really nice piece, I think it was on Twitter by Henry Cook, that just said, you know, what we're doing here is squabbling over small amounts of money relative to how much money is spent by a government doing its work every day.
There's been plenty of times where people have just popped off to do things, you know, at the taxpayers' expense, and be it within New Zealand or oftentimes without New Zealand.
So, I mean, I think it's really, you know, as much as I hate to bag the media, really it's about the clickbait headlines here as well, because there's actually, you know, misinformation that's out there. So some in the media are saying this was a special flight just for her. Others were saying, well, actually, the plane had to come back anyway and then go back again because it couldn't stay on the runway because it's not a big enough runway to be able to have all these planes just sitting there.
Yeah.
So you know, it's really unhelpful when the sort of shock jocks take over and decide to run a narrative that's actually got, I don't know, fake news in it.
Tell you what, when they do run those narratives, it's pretty full on, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Social media enables it to grow exponentially in a way that perhaps 10 years ago it didn't.
I mean, the one thing about having a centre-left government is you get some right-wing commentators, don't you? Woo!
Bring all out of the woodwork. I have to say that the right-wing commentators in Australia over Nauru have been just as bad. I don't know if you've heard of Andrew Bolt. He writes for one of the Murdoch papers. He was in the media yesterday saying that we should stop talking about, you know, the Pacific Island leaders should stop talking about refugees and other things and lose some weight.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know,
really?
Exactly.
Classic Australian. Excuse my racism, but classic Australian. Now, what was the deal with one of our reporters being detained there, with Barbara Driver being detained? What on earth did she do that caused so much hullabaloo?
So the Nauru government is saying that in order to talk to refugees or to do work outside what was the limited, you know, role of the Pacific Island Forum, they had to get sort of a special dispensation on their visa. And when they did that, then they would be escorted by a government official, you know, whenever they want to go talk to a refugee. So she didn't do that, and they pounced on her.
She went rogue. She went rogue.
She did. But, I mean, it's a really broader, interesting issue more broadly, because the Nauru government had actually banned the ABC journalists from getting visas, so that the government had said only 3 journalists per country, and when Australia put in to have the ABC journalist and 2 Associated Press journalists go, they refused to give the ABC journalist a visa, saying that under no circumstances would the ABC be allowed into Nauru because they were biased and weren't doing responsible reporting on Nauru. So I think Barbara Drever's, you know, sorry about that.
Did you get run over by a ferry?
That was my reminder that I now have to go to a US embassy thing and give a talk on international policy making. Sorry about that. You know, but I think it's symptomatic of the Nauru government's real worry that people will get the true story on the refugees and report it when their economy is totally dependent on the Australian government giving them, you know, money for these
propping them up. Yeah. So let's move on to Phil Twyford's housing takeover. He says, "Come on, Auckland City, you're not doing. Come on, like, well, we've got the big machines rolling. Let's go." What does it mean? What does it mean for the country, and cost wise?
Yeah, I think constitutionally, local government doesn't have a lot of power anyway. Central government gives it its power through the Local Government Act in a way. So,
do you think maybe this is just more of a matter of it was always going to happen anyway?
Well, you know, he's setting up this Urban Development Authority, and maybe, you know, managing the housing crisis in Auckland needs some kind of additional body. You know, I know that Phil Goff is, you know, saying, well, you know, let's just take this flow and we're doing work on consents and we're building houses.
12,000 consents, he told me.
Yeah, but I wonder if they're kind of, you know, doing a little yay moment over this, in the sense that, you know, Goff is hamstrung by certain kinds of interests in this city that when the unitary plan went through, it wasn't an easy path.
What sort of interests are you inferring there?
You know, those with really large sections and very wealthy suburbs that don't want to see, you know, urban infill.
Oh, the reason we're talking about selling the Avondale racecourse and not the Ellerslie racecourse?
Something like that, perhaps. I mean, I think in that sense, then taking it one, removing one step from council, so long as council is, you know, consulted and everything is done in this sort of perhaps a three-way, you know, with citizens of Auckland, the council and the Urban Development Authority, it might enable council to actually do other core business but also keep a hand in and know that they've got that, you know, that Phil Goff might actually be able to be in a position to be re-elected even if there is some high-density housing put in posh suburbs.
And I guess like all groups of people that are in a business or a collective, if everybody does their job really well, everything will go fine.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so just thumbs up. Someone who's not doing their job well, just very quickly, Claire Curran.
Oh, no, bless. Like, I mean, I really think...
It's almost like one of those undercover bosses who can't even do the lower job.
Yeah. I mean, I think...
Time to go.
Yeah, it is.
Time to go.
I think they should just, you know, take her broadcasting and the other leftover portfolio that she has and just, you know, let her go now. She's a liability, and this is the thing about
ministerial Well, wasn't she? She stripped of the portfolios anyway, wasn't she? But now she's.
No, she got left with two, and she sits. She's still a minister, but she sits outside cabinet.
Oh.
So really, probably she should have just lost the lot, and just be put back on the bench. Backbench and left to kind of work out, you know, how you do this job, which is, you know, ministers are accountable to the people through Parliament, and clearly she hasn't kind of got a handle on the processes associated with doing transparent government.
They're pretty tiny things. It's like using a personal email account, not putting a meeting in your diary, that sort of stuff. It seems to sort of easily. You know, an easy thing for anyone else to do, but in government, no.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you've got to separate yourself from your personal life, and I mean, she was the Minister for Open Government, okay, and then you're doing things using your Gmail account, which is still searchable, but it's much harder to get access to it because it is a personal email, so it's, like, a lot of this is about perception, and people's perceptions now is that she's not... You know, she's not at the level of competency that we would require of our ministers, who get paid a lot more money than backbenchers, and, you know, they're expected to be, you know, representing us and doing the work of government and being able to be accountable through question time in Parliament, and she didn't even have answers yesterday to the questions that were put to her in Parliament.
I think the word's blithering.
Yeah, it's what it sounded like.
And so it's not a good look for the government, not a good look for the coalition. It's not a good look when you've got new people in the seats, and you're trying to convince everybody that it's going to be fine.
Okay, you've got to
shut it down.
Yeah.
Get out of there. Yep. Hey, Jennifer, thanks very much for talking to us. Always a pleasure. Good luck with your US embassy talk this morning.
Yeah. Thanks.
I didn't send through my notes for you, but you should be right, shouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
No worries,
cool. Thanks very much, Jennifer. Bye bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.